Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley and Shaka Hiss. So we'll kick things off in the FA Cup quarterfinals. Defending champions Manchester City taking on Newcastle. This would be pretty much one-way traffic throughout. Bernardo Silva would get a brace. Both of those goals coming through deflected efforts. In the end, City cruising Newcastle out. Now, after the game, Eddie Howe said that he felt that Newcastle were unlucky because of the two deflected goals. Do you agree, Craig?
I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, Manchester City looked good.
Yeah.
Because you made them look good. You sat off. You played three at the back, which was five at the back. And, yeah, he talks about deflections. Oh, we're unlucky with deflections. Well, when you drop that deep, and by the way, when the first one goes in, Fabian Scher is on the six-yard line, almost holding hands with the goalkeeper. Mm. Not far off it from the second one. So when you play a back, they actually played a back three, which turned into a back five. Murphy played right wing back, Byrne played left wing back, three big centre backs in there, basically going to the Etihad and trying, in an FA Cup quarter final, trying not to get battered. Yeah. They had that real chance we showed from Alexander Isak's, but I mean, the only thing that got Man City wet today wasn't sweat from what rate, it was the Manchester weather. Just raining, because it was a canter, a cakewalk.
It's interesting, Shaq, because like Leicester are playing Chelsea tomorrow. Mm-hmm. For Leicester, their main goal is promotion. That's what they care about. So if they went to Manchester City and lost 2-0, it wouldn't be the end of the world, because they've obviously got promotion. Newcastle have got nothing else going on in their lives at the moment. Wouldn't think it going into this time.
This was their season. You wouldn't think it, seeing how they performed. And I'll be honest, after the game, I was a little concerned. And you know, I think very highly of Eddie Howe. But I was concerned that this is how that game would have been spun. That we lost 2-0. It was two deflected goals. Ortega had one really good save to make. It wasn't that bad. But the truth is, anybody who watched the game from beginning to end, it was. And then to Eddie Howe's comments that they were trying to stop Manchester City playing on from the back. So you play five at the back and sit at the top of your own box. I just don't understand it. I don't understand the explanation. Listen, if your plan is to come and sit deep and, you know, because they don't have Kevin De Bruyne, you're hoping that he can't expose you. Say that. I don't understand the explanation as offered today. From a Newcastle perspective, it was disappointing on a number of levels, because I'm not sure where that goal was going to come from. And yes, Isak had a good chance, but that's one chance on target in the whole game. Other than that, I can't really say where City were troubled, at what point Newcastle really took their foot off the gas or took chances. It's an FA Cup tie. Goal difference hasn't come into this. But at no point did I think Newcastle took chances to get themselves back in the game. And again, this is their season. They're going to finish mid-table. They're not in any trouble of getting to the top four, top five, whatever it is. They're in no trouble of finishing in the bottom three. This is do or bust here. And it was a desperately poor bust, in my opinion.
If I'd seen a Championship side go there and play like that in an FA Cup quarter-final, maybe I could have accepted it.
Yeah.
And Coventry City, it was a great story today. We'll get to that, going to Wolves, not City, but going to Wolves and winning. I actually think they would have made a better fist of a game at the Etihad than Newcastle. And Newcastle were in the Champions League this season. Okay, it's been a roller coaster, been a bumpy ride for them. But you look at the side that hit out today; they're still had good players, and they saw what Liverpool did with a kind of second string team last week. They were the better side against City because they didn't set off them. And yeah, they were at home, they were at Anfield, but they went at City and they asked questions. And my God, City were flustered and ruffled. I'm like, Newcastle, it looked to me today that Eddie Howe had said, listen, we're expected to get knocked out. If we do, just make sure it's not by five or six.
For City, it was almost like a training game.
It was. And Newcastle played their part in that. Back five sat basically at the top of your own box for the entire game. City just were able to pass the ball around freely and take their time in doing that without any real pressure. At no point did Newcastle step up and apply pressure and make them think twice about what decisions were being made in midfield. So it really just kind of panned out into this boring team. And the disappointing thing is, If it's 1-0 and you say, okay, we're containing them and we're going to hurt them on a set piece because we have size and physicality about us. But from the time the second goal goes in, you now have to press. You can't rely on two late set pieces. Surely not. But at no point do I think Newcastle did that. And that for me was a huge disappointment. And to Craig's point, when you talk about Newcastle over the last couple of seasons, how well they started, the Champions League, and we've spoken about Liverpool, we've spoken about Spurs, and how even when they had injuries, their identity never changed. You could criticise, at times, people attempted to criticise Postecoglou in particular for how he just continued to go about his business the same way. Newcastle regressed, and even as players became fit again, you never saw them try to rediscover that form or the style of play that brought success last season. And that has been the biggest frustration for me.
So commentary through as well as Manchester City. Two more ties on Sunday, including Chelsea against Leicester. And then the big one at Old Trafford, Manchester United taking on Liverpool. Liverpool, big favourites going into this side to book a place in the final four. And that's backed up by our predictions as well. And let's face it, Craig, it won't be much of a surprise if Liverpool go there and win, because that's where we are these days.
Yeah, I mean, look, in times of trouble over the past, and I'm thinking back to the odd occasion when Solskjaer was the manager and they've gone to say Man City, and we all sat here and went, they're going to get battered.
Yeah.
And they've came away with a win because they played on the counter-attack and they sucked City in. I know it's not Man City tomorrow, but just making the point that it's happened before, but it could happen against Liverpool. If it does, I think that's the way that it will play out. I don't see any way that this United side are going to dominate possession, because we've seen them not dominate games against Fulham, against Bournemouth at home where they got battered, against Luton away where they won and they were lucky. Even the Everton game where they won 2-0 with the two penalties, Everton, it was incredible. Everton had 50% possession. Now, they're a side who sort of live, Everton that is, on 30 to 35% possession. And here they are going to Old Trafford and somehow getting a foothold in the game. If Liverpool play the way they did last week, and that is going to be difficult, as you know, because they were, and we all agreed, they were brilliant last week in that big game at Anfield. They should have won. Didn't. If they play like that, is there anybody going to come up with an argument into how United are going to stop it?
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, you know, we've put up graphics on this FC show time and time and time again about the amount of shots that United have been allowing on Onana's goal, mm-hmm. and that it wouldn't last, and that this little run that they were on where people were saying, oh, United, no, it was never going to last, and they'd get the odd result. But can they give up that amount of territory potentially against this Liverpool team and expect to get anything? I don't think so.
The thing for me with this Newcastle side, and Manchester United, excuse me, and again, we could make the argument that this season kind of hinges on this. We were talking about it earlier and wondering whether England would be getting that fifth spot for our Champions League. We're talking about Manchester United holding on to a hope of finishing fifth and that England get the fifth spot for the Champions League. That's kind of how far it's drifted for them. So whereas their season isn't totally over, you can make the argument that at home to Liverpool in the FA Cup, at this stage of the competition, a win here would mean an incredible amount for that fan base. That being said, other than the emotion of it and kind of significance of the result, it's hard from a footballing perspective to make that argument. Given what we've seen from Liverpool over recent weeks, given what we've seen from Manchester United pretty much all season, you just don't see this going Manchester United.
If Liverpool go and press United like they did City at home, City are the best team in England until somebody topples them. They're the best team in Europe until somebody topples them, potentially this year. They tried to play out. They couldn't. Even they, with their quality players, could not play through the Liverpool press. So what does Ten Hag do? Do they try and still play out if Liverpool do that? And I don't see any reason why Liverpool wouldn't. Or do they then just try and go long? And then it becomes long balls up to maybe Rashford or whoever it is, and Van Dijk, and they'll scoop it up. And then it'll just keep coming back. So how do they play it? What's Ten Hag's game plan here? Liverpool will have a game plan. That's why they are where they are in the league. That's why they're in all these big competitions. What's Ten Hag's game plan going to be? Because it can't just be, oh, win it back, knock it long to Marcus Rashford. Let's try and knock it. There has to be something more. And at this moment in time, from what we've seen, there hasn't been a plan B. In fact, for most of it, there hasn't been a plan A.
All will be revealed, of course, tomorrow in a match that you can watch live here on ESPN+. Me, Shaka and Stevie in the studio. Craig Burley on the call with John Champion. That's the late game preceding that at Stamford Bridge. We're up early for Chelsea against Leicester City.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
KCU kick off the opening of their stadium with a 5-4 victory. For more on this, here's Seb and Ali.
The 2024 NWSL regular season kicks off with an absolute goal fest as the Kansas City Current opening their brand new stadium, CPKC Stadium, win by a final score of 5-4. That's right, 5-4 over the Portland Thorns. Ali, you've been a part of a lot of regular season openers. You've seen a lot of crazy games in the league. You see anything like that?
Not in my career, I don't think. I mean, there have been a lot of goals scored on some teams that I've been that have played on, which is very uncomfortable. But you know, listen, defensively, yes, there are pieces that both teams have to work on. But moving forward, great for Kansas City in this historic moment in this historic stadium to get the win today. That's really all that matters. And for Portland, you know, to come back and score, you know, four goals to keep it kind of tight in the end, that was impressive too.
From a Kansas City perspective, I think, you know, you get all the buzz around opening a stadium. It's kind of it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get the people who come here to come back. I don't think anybody that was here today is not coming back. I mean, that was a great game from the fan, the neutral perspective.
Yeah, there's going to be, you know, fans and supporters fighting for seats to be here, to be a part of this atmosphere, to be a part of this franchise, to just be a part of the excitement around women's soccer. And of course, in Kansas City, this is a really beautiful moment for the city, for the fans, and for this club.
The game was crazy. The atmosphere, you could say, was crazy. Do you think the atmosphere in the end impacted the game?
I do think so, because when, as a former player, I'm walking out into a stadium, and if it's full like this, you automatically get chills. You automatically get that extra motivation. And that 12th man in the supporters to really help you onto the field. And just like, you know, Lo said to us earlier about, you know, feeling the fans in energy and kind of applying that to the game as a player is also really comforting and really enjoy, you know, that's what makes it so fun. And so to kind of walk out into this and to see all these people who are really supporting you is an incredible feeling as a player.
Kansas City Current then 5-4 winners over the Portland Thorns. Let's get some more thoughts on this from the ladies that called the game, Jen Hildreth and Leanne Sanderson. Guys, what'd you make of the 90 minutes that we just witnessed?
Well, Sebi, I'm just happy we each have a little bit of voice left after that. I mean, what a game, Leanne. What a way to start the NWSL season.
I mean, I can't even catch my breath, Jen. It's been, honestly, absolutely brilliant. You know, we said We wanted goals from a neutral perspective, and Ali touched upon it being a defender that she is, you know, and I even did, and I'm a forward. But what a game. You know, the occasion was incredible, and I think it's all about managing your emotions in games like this. And what a game it was. I said it during the commentary, didn't I? I don't remember a game I played in like this, or, you know, commentated on or analysed. And you said it, you know, the fifth, tied with fifth amount of goals ever in the NWSL. I mean, if this is what it's going to be like this season, we are in for an unbelievable ride, and yeah. I'm so excited.
And to be clear, we had that five in there. No, this is tied for the most, my friend. There's nine. It's right up there. This is the most. So how about what got you most excited or most intrigued with either of these two teams in this match? What are you looking forward to seeing more of?
I think, you know, ultimately, you can't be conceding five or four goals within a game. I think from a coaching perspective, for us, we love it, but a coach would not like that. So I think Blacko Andonoski, you know, Lo mentioned it there. She wants to take a break based upon his analysis going forward. But I think Mike Norris, Portland Thorns were better in the second half, but both teams, I think, defensively have to be better. But I think on the attack, I mean, Chiwenga coming into this game, I can't wait to see her play even more this year. She was relentless in her pressure. She was brilliant. Sophia Smith, I mean, because Portland Thorns lost, I think it's easy to get wrapped up on how badly they were defensively, you know, and the goalkeeping mistakes. But I think Sophia Smith and Janine Becky, I mean, coming back into this game, Janine Becky's been out for a while with that ACL injury, getting two goals and making that impact. So there's a lot of positives to take, but I think first game, Jen, we can't ask for more than what we've had, can we?
No, we certainly cannot. Big stage, and they deliver. Sebi, Ali, back to you guys.
Thank you very much, guys. Yeah, so we were talking, Ali, in the pregame with Patrick Mahomes, of course, part of the ownership group. You asked some interesting question. You said, you know, what are the expectations here for you? You're an owner, but you're coming off your own Super Bowl title. He seemed to make it clear, like, they want championships. Based on what we saw today, is this team a legit title contender, you think, or maybe even a title favorite Kansas City this year?
Yes, from what we saw today, I mean, the play both, you know, on both sides of the ball, in the attacking phases and then defending phases, yes, there are a few things that obviously they need to work out. But, you know, obviously a few players were taken out of the game and new players kind of, you know, brought in and to fill some of those positions. So maybe that was the adjustment as well. But I do think that this is a team where Vlatko now has them set up to really understand the game and understand his principles and understand what the expectations, the roles, responsibilities of players. And that's what you can see today. You wanted to come out. You wanted to focus on winning the game. And how to do that is get numbers into the attack, create opportunities, finish your chances that you have, because usually against Portland, you don't get many. So when you do get them, you have to finish and you have to capitalize it. And then on the defensive end, you individually defend, and then obviously as a team collective. So yes, they do have to work out some of those kinks, because four goals were scored. But opening day, a really great, great Kansas City team that I saw. And it's exciting for what the season's going to bring for them.
A lot of questions coming into this. How would Kansas City do under Vlatko Andonoski? All that ends well is well, right, as they get the 5-4 victory over the Portland Thorns on a historic day at the brand new CPKC Stadium in Kansas City.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Some Premier League action on Saturday, including Fulham against Spurs. Fulham beating Postecoglou's side by 3-0. what that means with regards to the race at the top four. They have a chance to move above Aston Villa, who take on West Ham later this weekend. And as it stands, Spurs remain fifth. Frank LaBeouf had a keen eye on this game, Frank. And I suppose the obvious question is, what on earth happened to Spurs?
That's a very good question. You know, after the fantastic win against Aston Villa last week, we all were expecting, you know, something very good and what we call consistency, and nothing happened. I mean, from the start, from the beginning, Fulham were the best team. Spurs only existed maybe for 10 minutes between the 20s and the 30s minutes, but after that, that was all. They tried after the 3-0. There are some chances. Werner made missed a big chance. But otherwise, it was all Fulham, all a fantastic team who showed how to attack, where normally we are expecting Spurs to do so. That was a very bad performance from the Spurs. Very surprising one. I don't have the explanation, but everything worked in the wrong way for Spurs today. And in Fulham's side, it was a fantastic game from the guys. And I want to, because I've been sometimes very critical towards him, I want to say Robinson was absolutely fantastic today.
Anthony Robinson, of course, having an assist in the opening goal there.
Trying to make American friends here, Frank. Is he unlike me?
Opposite to you.
Sure.
Frank's the most patient man in the world, isn't he? I mean, I've just realised he sat for half an hour, yes, listening to us waffling on. That would drive me nuts.
Oh, Frank's, yes, but Frank has a different mentality to life.
I'm not sure.
Better than you. He's very.
But that's just peaks and troughs, I suppose, for Tottenham. But it's a surprise, that, isn't it? And yeah, a little bit of a wake up call about finishing the season strongly. Obviously, Van de Ven's missing again.
But apart from that, you can't point at many other players that are injured and missing.
No, absolutely not. And this looks to me on the face of it is just not a particularly good performance. Don't forget the loss at Fulham in the Carabao Cup earlier in the season, but he did make a lot of changes. Yeah,
that's a silly comparison.
He kind of mailed it in. It's not a silly comparison. It's just a comparison, right? You are skating on thin ice, for the term be told. But yeah, it's a surprise, and there's a lot of work for Tottenham to do. And I know Tottenham fans will probably get frustrated, but it's been an enjoyable season for them. See where it finishes. Maybe it'll be the top four, maybe it'll not. But you do feel there is a lot of work to do there. But I tell you what, I thought Fulham, at the start of the season, they were struggling a little bit. There was a lot of talk about Marco Silva in the summer going to Saudi Arabia for this big payday, and you kind of wondered, have they taken their eye off the ball a little bit? But talking about working within the budgetary constraints that some people have, the job he's done at Fulham has been, you know, bearing in mind the amount of money they're spending, has been quite incredible.
Have the recent results of Villa and Spurs opened the door a little bit?
For Man United?
For Manchester United?
No, because if you had half a brain in your head, yes, you'd have looked at that table, you would have seen there was a 17-plus goal difference.
Yeah,
which makes it from, takes it from 7 points,
yes,
6 points to 7 points.
Yeah, that's very true.
So I just don't. And look, well, Tottenham and Villa drop points between now and the season. Of course they will. But you may have noticed Man United are not the most consistent team in the planet.
If you're United, you're clinging to the fact that they both have to play everybody top three.
Yes.
But, you know, again, you are asking favours of somebody else and relying on maybe a bit of an Aston Villa collapse between now and the end of the season, some more of this type of inconsistency from Spurs. That's not a great place to be in, but that's where you are right now.
If England get the fifth spot...
It looks like they will,
right? Yes. All right.
What do you mean, all right?
It's not... If they get that fifth spot and Man United get into fifth and gain a Champions League place because of that, for me, that should not save him. That backdoor entry should not save him, because there have been too many inconsistencies this season in his team selection and the way his team have played. So that's if people are hanging on to that, and indeed if he's hanging on to that, surely to God, the new investment from Ineos, the ambition has to be higher than what they've seen at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, people may say, well, if he gets the fifth spot in the Champions League, forget that. Forget that. That's not going to save him. They have not been good enough for him to survive this season, whether they get fifth or not. I don't think they will, But don't use that as a barometer for trying to say, oh, the season's not been that bad. In terms of the league, it's been pretty awful for Man United.
Villa and Spurs still head and shoulders above Manchester United when it comes to those chances of qualifying for the Champions League, yeah, Frank?
Yes. I'm with the guys. I don't think Man United was going to catch them, any of them. I think it's going to be between the Villains and Spurs. And it's quite impossible. As Craig mentioned, the inconsistency of Manchester United make them unable to catch, for me, Aston Villa and Tottenham. And they don't deserve that. I mean, Manchester United is a bigger club, that's for sure, than the two others. But with the season that they had so far, they don't deserve to be in the first five.
Frank will be back with us for extra time. There are other Premier League matches as well today, significant ones when it comes to the battle for safety. Brentford are just getting dragged into this relegation scrap at very much the wrong end of the season. Burnley would beat them by 2-1 elsewhere. A late equaliser for Luton would see them grab a point against Nottingham Forest, which doesn't really help either side. As promised then, Frank will be back on Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There was, of course, La Liga matches today, including the league leaders Real Madrid. For more on this, here's Kay and Ali.
Thanks, Dan. Kay and Ali here, and let's get you caught up on how it all played out in Pamplona as Real Madrid took on Osasuna up in the north of Spain. In fact, it all gets underway very early on in this game. Third minute.
Clear it. Pass it. Do something. No, don't do that. Oh, pressure on Catena from Vini Jr. Catena takes forever to make a decision, and now it's panic. Now it's, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll tell you what you're going to do is you're going to give up a goal. Good touch initially from Vini Jr. to create an angle away from Sergio Herrera. Finds that far post. 1-0.
But soon enough, Osasuna would find the leveler, and it came from a man who's in form for them right now, in Ante Budimir.
Poor defending at the near post from Real Madrid, poor defending at the back post from Real Madrid, poor defending again at the near post from Real Madrid, just poor defending overall, tapping from my kind of range for Ante Budimir.
But you definitely like what happened next for Real Madrid in terms of the move, Ale.
It's a good run out of the midfield from Fede Valverde, good ball in from Brahim Diaz. The thought process from Fede Valverde to put this quickly into a dangerous position, and then Dani Carvajal, who does so well with a control finish outside of the right foot. Classy finish at that, 2-1.
Just before the half would come to an end, we would see Vini Jr. getting himself into a little bit of trouble here for complaining to the referee.
For no reason whatsoever. He's 20, 30 yards away from this play. Now he's complaining to the referee and complaining again. And the arms up in the air, runs into a yellow card, tucks himself into a yellow card. Now he's suspended for the next match against Athletic Club.
Yeah, obviously going to be a miss against the team that are in form right now. That coming after the international break. 61st minute, goes all the way up the pitch from the goalkeeper to Brahim for another goal for Real Madrid.
And the nightmares for Catena continue. He goes and challenges for the ball that he's never going to win. In doing that, he opens up a space right down the middle of the back line for Osasuna. Brahim Diaz recognizes the space, runs into that space, finishes the chance, 3-1.
And then we would see the very best of Vinny once again for Real Madrid's fourth.
Have I told you about the nightmare of Osasuna and the high line? No pressure on the ball. Valverde recognizes the pacing behind. Layoff to Vini Jr. and then it's class. Class. A little dinky-do. A little something. Yeah. A little feel from Vini Jr. No chance for Osasuna. Vini Jr. is telling everybody, I can hear you. I can hear you. Go ahead and boo. Yeah. The bench. Go ahead and boo that too. And then Carlo Ancelotti says, come here, papi. Ven acá, papi. Ven. I love you. Te quiero mucho, Vini. Yeah, I'm proud of you. That's right. Come here and sit down with me. 4-2 Real Madrid in the end.
Yeah, Osasuna got another goal very late on in this one. And Arda Güler almost scored from the halfway line. But it did finish 4-2 to Real Madrid, taking all 3 points back to the capital. And they continue to lead the way in La Liga. Let's now welcome in Luis Garcia and Alex Kirkland from Spain. Let me start with you, Luis Garcia. Vinny Jr. delivering once again.
Delivering his style. We saw a fantastic performance from him. It's true that we don't like when he gets involved with the referee. It's true that we don't like when he gets involved with the crowd, but we enjoy so much when he's on the ball. If you give the space to Vinny Jr., he's going to exploit it. Today, I think that Osasuna didn't make or didn't see much Real Madrid play in the last few years, because once you got Vinny coming ahead to you, what you don't want is to flirt around, to try to be the clever, to try to be smart. No, you put the ball away from him. And in the second, when you got space, you cannot make the line with Vinny Jr. on the run, because that's perfect for his style of play. He waits until the last moment, he's calmed down, he's relaxed, he's got composure, because he's been learning in the past 3 years, and that touch is just magnificent. Once again, Vinny delivering another two goals, top of scorer of La Liga, I think one behind Jude Bellingham, his former teammate. And again, he's showing that he's so talented, so quality, and he just needs to get away from all kind of controversy.
You can just see, since his return from injury, the figures that he's putting up there. He's going to be a big miss against Athletic once play returns, Alex.
Yeah, fortunately for Real Madrid, just as he is absent, Jude Bellingham comes back from his suspension. Because you would worry about this Real Madrid team and I think their goal-scoring capability without Jude Bellingham and without Vinicius Jr. on the pitch. So it's good news for Madrid that Bellingham will be back as Vinicius misses out. But yeah, this is not a time that you want Vinicius to be out of the team. Like you say, his form is fantastic. It's 6 goals in 4 games now. Scored those 2 goals against Valencia, scored against Leipzig, scored against Celta. And he's just... when he plays like this, at times, he just looks unplayable, Vinicius Jr. It looks like there's absolutely nothing the defenders can do because he's so quick. He's always had that pace. He's added kind of this incredible strength over the years. So that combination, when he's on the ball, you can't get it. You can't get the ball off him. You can't beat him for pace. When he's in behind, it's almost end of story because his finishing is so much better than it used to be as well. Another really good performance from him. Decisive. And yet it's unfortunate from a Madrid point of view that he won't be available against Athletic. A very tough potential game against one of the most informed teams in La Liga right now.
Part of what made Vinny Jr. unplayable today, to use Alex's description, is the fact that he didn't just park himself on the left-hand side, which allows defenders to use the sideline as an additional defender. What he did today is that there was variety. So he was on the left, but now he also got on the inside shoulder of the outside back. He also got on the inside shoulder of the central defender, and he was willing to run in behind on inside channels. So when you have that sort of variety, you create confusion for the back line. So as much as Osasuna had a back three, it didn't matter because he's making runs splitting that back three, or he's floating into spaces in front of the back three, which then pulls players out of position, and it opens up space for the runs of Valverde coming late, for the runs of Rodrigo to go in behind, for the runner, whoever wants to run out of the midfield from Real Madrid. So he becomes unplayable because there is variety. 1v1 situation on the outside, but I can also work the inside. That forces players out of position, and it allows you to create space for yourself and create space for others.
Vinny aside, Luis, who stood out to you today for Real Madrid?
I was talking about Brahim Diaz in the beginning of the game, and I think he did a very great job. We need to think that he's involved because Jude Bellingham wasn't ready for this game, so he needs to prove that he got value to the team. And he was fantastic. He got a fantastic pass for the first goal, for the second goal, and that run is just great. The amount of space he covered, running all around, arriving and taking that composure, taking the decision of finishing nice and calm. I think it was great. Understanding what is the space to have to run, that you go to a striker, they are sticking with the center backs. The space is created. Catena, once again, I think a wrong mistake, but he saw the space, he started making the run into the middle, and he did score once again. He's providing, he's delivering when he's needed, and I think, once again, he's a fantastic player for Real Madrid for these moments when he's more needed, when the team needs rotation.
And in terms of personnel, Alex, it is about to get better with injured players returning, especially with an international break coming up now.
Yeah, you've got this long spell now where you've got an international break, you've got the week of the Copa del Rey final where there's no La Liga action as well. So that's kind of helpful for Real Madrid at this point in terms of getting these players back and getting them available. We've talked about Courtois and Militao in particular coming back into the team. Courtois, I mean, let's be honest, in his absence, they haven't suffered that much because Andre Lunin's come in and done, in general, a very, very good job. You'd expect Courtois, when fit, to come back into the team. Militao as well, we saw Rudiger who's having a fantastic season. I think maybe Madrid's most important player after Bellingham and Vinicius at centre-back. Today it was Tchouaméni alongside him as well. But Militao, when fully fit, is such an important player, one of the best defenders in the world. So that's good news. The other player I wanted to pick up on as well, I think it would be unfair not to mention Fede Valverde, who I think got was it a hat-trick of assists today, involved in three of the goals. He's having a really good season, and maybe it's sort of quietly so as well, because he's not quite scoring as many spectacular goals as he did maybe a year or 18 months ago. So not getting as many headlines. But in terms of his all-round team play, I think Fede Valverde is having an exceptional season, and he was very, very good today as well.
Thanks, Alex, and thanks to Luis as well. More La Liga action coming up for you on Sunday. We have five games to enjoy, including the big one between Atleti and Barcelona, the marquee matchup in Spain this weekend. Ali and Al will be back with you for coverage beginning from 3:30 Eastern. For now, Dan, we'll send it back to you.
Thank you very much, Kez. We're on the subject of Real Madrid. Boys, you weren't here yesterday. Of course, it will be Real Madrid against Manchester City in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. These two teams very familiar with each other, given, of course, they've met in the two previous competitions as well.
You know, I'm not trying to be contrarian here.
Right, OK.
Because we have others on this show that are way more contrarian than me.
Right.
This is a great game, of course it is, but yeah. We've seen this movie. I'm actually, you know, we're going to talk about it, I know, but I'm personally actually looking forward to the Arsenal-Bayern game.
Right.
Because I just, with this one, I'm looking and saying, what's changed for Real Madrid?
Yes.
What's changed enough from last season where Man City battered them? I mean, it was quite embarrassing. Are they any better? Although they're probably going to win the league this year that they didn't last year, but that's because others have regressed. Are they in a better place to take Man City on than they were last year? I'm not sure they are.
Well, no, especially when you say Courtois, obviously Militao as well.
So I'm kind of wondering at the moment, is this going to be about City's mentality, or are Real Madrid actually going to try and take them on toe-to-toe?
Yeah.
Because they tried that last year and got the pants taken down.
But yeah, that's interesting. In that the deficit was so big last year in that second leg. It's like, what has changed? What will be different?
Well, I mean, to that point, I don't think City are as good as they were last season.
Sure.
I don't think Haaland has hit the heights that he was 12 months ago. Defensively, well, yes, they kept a clean sheet against Newcastle. Clean sheets have been few and far between for Manchester City during the course of this season. So you just wonder. But I still think, well, coming into this, I thought those were the two best teams left in the competition. And to see them go head-to-head a little bit earlier maybe than most would have liked, I still think it's an intriguing matchup. One that I think I would save up all kinds.
But as you say, Craig, you look at Arsenal and Bayern and it is an interesting clash because on paper, Arsenal being the much better side this season.
It's not. I mean, I don't know how many times these sides have met, really.
Bayern thrashed Arsenal, didn't they, over the period? Over
a while ago.
I would imagine so. But it's not a fixture you see very often for various reasons. And I think it is intriguing because, you know, are Bayern Munich going to find any form between now and end of the season? It's unlikely they're going to close that gap to Leverkusen. And Arsenal have been so good domestically, but did struggle against Porto over two legs. That just gives you a little crack and you say, is the lack of the Champions League experience in this current squad going to affect him against a much more experienced Bayern side, but not a particularly good Bayern side? Yeah, can turn it on offensively, but if I'm Arsenal and that back line is Eric Dier and Matthijs de Ligt, I'm kind of licking my chops at that. But it's a kind of current form v experience and nous in this competition. And the fact it's not something we see every Champions League year, I just think makes it intriguing.
There we go.
Told you I'd like the draw.
I know, you're very excited about it. Atleti could then move up to fourth in the table. Atleti, of course, have the chance to recapture that spot as they take on Barcelona in our big game tomorrow live here on ESPN+. You can see the bookies have it very tight indeed. You couldn't really separate Atleti or Barcelona. Let's hear from Alvaro Morata.
To win Barcelona, you need to play a really good game because they are always Barcelona. They always have good players, and now we are in a positive dynamic because we are in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, but it will be a really tough game tomorrow.
It's always a tough ground to go through, you know, it's always a special atmosphere that they are able to create, especially in this kind of, you know, big games. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a tough challenge for us, obviously a very tough game, but we are full of confidence at the moment with the results that we had recently. And I think the key is also to prove that on, this kind of biggest stages, you know, and this kind of tough and difficult grounds, and it's going to be a real test for us.
Well, good one then, talking to Gemma.
Well, those two interviews have officially gone top of the charts in the most cliches
that you get
in 2 minutes about tough places
tough
to
game,
go and tough
yes,
games.
Good
and,
teams.
Well, listen, it will be tough if Alvaro Morata spends the bulk of his game on his backside again, or running offside. He's a shocker. And it wasn't until Memphis Depay and Correa come on against Inter that Atleti really sparked into life. That being said, for the most part, he's had a pretty good season alongside Griezmann. But, boy, he does blow hot and cold. When he's on, he's on. And when he's off, he's pretty much a liability. But you have to feel that great victory against Inter has to have spurred Atleti on.
Do you think it'll spur them or exhaust them?
No, this team have got energy, and he can make some changes. You know, we saw Raquelme coming off the bench, and
you're the only one who's going for a win out of the three of us.
Yeah, I think over the even though Barca are higher up, I think over the piece, I think Atleti are a much more efficient side. They've puffed and puffed a little bit since around the turn of the year, which really has taken them out of the title race quite some time ago. But at home, at the whatever you call it, Metropolitano. I'm not going to say Wanda again.
There you go.
No, they've had a great record there. And I don't, even though Barca beat Napoli, I'm not buying into the fact that they've turned into a good side all of a sudden.
Yeah, this home record is quite something for Atleti.
It is, but I think Atleti have, to use Craig's team, blowing hot and cold, but since Griezmann came back and said that Inter result maybe changes the perspective of... I think they've had a little bit of a dip in form recently. On the other side of that coin, while Barcelona have not at all been great themselves, since Xavi announced that he's stepping down, they've been able to get results. And I just feel those two things kind of play off against each other. We see exactly what Atleti shows up. But I think Barca have enough to get up.
I noticed you didn't steal my earlier... terminology.
Which one?
The batter.
That's your eyelash.
Bat an eyelash.
Bat an eyebrow. No, I'll leave that for you.
So it's Atletico Madrid against Barcelona. That's our feature game tomorrow, live here on ESPN Plus and cracking games for you right across the board. That is our late game at 3:30 Eastern. That's it.
That brings. Remember that goalie in the MLS game, Shaq? It was like, ah!
Wow. Bit of a shocker.
Cracker.
Frank LaBeouf is back for extra time. Stay with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your questions. Craig and Shaka here in the studio. Frank LaBeouf joins us as well. Shall I share a story?
Why not?
It's concerning because it's a dream about Craig.
What? Hold on a minute.
Has anybody vet this before?
So we're doing the show. It's me, Craig and Stevie. And suddenly, Stevie goes down. Doof. Your trauma is coming to my dreams.
Hold on, Stevie's...
So Stevie...
All this is your dream, right? Go ahead.
Stevie fades, goes he's on. Down like this, and I'm...
It's
like,
kept this quiet.
Stevie,
old.
You're okay. And Craig's like, get on with it. I've got to see my dogs. Honestly, I promise you. Like, Craig's trying to carry on with the show. People are fussing. Then I call 999 as you're doing dreams, realise you're in the wrong country. 911, no one answers. And I wake up laughing to myself because I think... That could actually happen.
Every single aspect of it.
Craig would just be like, oh, he's right.
Oh, he'd be all right.
He'll come round in a moment.
Had you been drinking?
No, I hadn't, no.
Well, I'm not even funny, right? You did a particularly good job when the big man went down.
Right.
over he went, looking for his 3 months off. What you got?
He got his 3 months off in Shawshank.
Standard. But nickel hits there. There's no way. And let me tell you now. There's not a chance I'm giving him the kiss of life. Absolutely. And by the way, he would not want me to.
No, I think that'd be it. He'd be quite happy to drift off.
He'd rather go.
Yes.
In the knowledge, he'd rather go. Because if I resuscitated him with that, and then somebody told him.
Yeah, then that would be it.
He'd have a heart attack.
Send him over the other
side. Then get to life again.
I've got to get back from the dogs. Come on, let's just get on with it. That's what I heard.
I'd say something, wouldn't I?
Right, here we go. Frank, would you rather play under a manager like Ancelotti or Pep Guardiola?
Oh, do we have to make a choice? I would love to play with both, you know, and both, you know, they are absolutely fantastic. I think Ancelotti is more like a father, and his behavior is more like a more protective person, but Pep is a genius, and I played against Pep. I've seen Ancelotti playing. They were two fantastic midfielders. But Pep was very special when he was a player.
No,
and I
we don't care him as a player, Frank. We don't care. It's about the manager. Do you want someone to give you a hug?
Yeah, no, but I want to go to that point. I played against him and I saw him in Qatar. He was 1 year with me in Qatar. And I saw him talking and talking. He was already a coach on the field. So and I felt that he would be somebody special. He's so smart. He feels the game. He's inventive as well. I would have loved to play under Pep. I think I'm older than him, so I would be strange.
No, I'd be all right.
Would you like to talk about the Borussia Dortmund PSV game again,
dear,
Frank?
I started on that again.
Very.
It's like an elephant, wasn't it?
What's that?
You, with your memory.
I've got a very good memory.
You want to.
I
Who would you prefer to play under? Someone like Ancelotti or Pep?
I actually think Pep is a... Pep. Get this first name. Hit me. Hit me. Punch me, I'll allow it.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah.
Joseph. He's Joseph.
Go for the nose.
Joseph.
It's
Joseph. Joseph Guardiola.
No, it's Guardiola. It's Guardiola. It's not
Pep.
Names.
It's all right.
Although I think he's actually technically the better of the coaches.
Yes.
Ancelotti's had a lot of success. I'd prefer to play under Ancelotti because I think I'd get more golf time.
Right.
Well, I think it'd be more relaxed.
Okay.
He's not... he doesn't seem as intense.
No.
More of a sort of man-manager. Yeah. Not that Guardiola's not, but he's just more intense. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm thinking I might get the odd day off more with Ancelotti.
I see.
And the success.
Yes. Nice mix.
Nice mix.
Carlo or Pep?
Carlo.
Yeah.
What's your reasoning? Days off?
No, I think I respond better to man managers. I have during my career.
Right.
Harry was a good man manager.
Okay. Shaka, I'm becoming more and more underwhelmed by Vicario. Thoughts?
No, I think he's a good goalkeeper.
Is it a fault for any of them today?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think.
We're busy. We're watching.
Yeah, we're watching.
We're very busy. In fact, you had your head in the biggest sandwich ever seen from the calf at ESPN.
Just me.
But someone didn't finish their sandwich, and somebody did.
Correct. And that's why I am the physical athlete that I am now.
What did your family say to you when you wore a white T-shirt? It was okay to about here.
It was about there. You said, if I could have done that, so it was all right. So we found when you put a little bit of weight on in the winter, it's good to lower the chair a little bit, yep, to take the bottom half of the top half out of the equation.
Perfect. There's a little tip for you if you ever want to work in TV.
Now, there are other members of this squad that should...
Yeah.
Yeah, they did say it was...
They're suggesting it's spring now.
What?
The winter.
And I will hit the gym.
Go to the gym
and
now.
And I will be...
Yeah. It's broken under the weight.
Now, this jacket fastened nicely.
Right, okay.
But...
I'm worried about Shaka's eye.
Hey, it's cold in Connecticut in the winter.
Yes.
What do seals do? They blubber up in the winter. And the weather gets warmer again, trim down.
Brilliant. Blubber up. For Frank, how did you prepare for the 98 World Cup final knowing you'd be up against Ronaldo?
Well, I made sure that my teammates would be spot on to help me out.
That's good. Did you blubber up?
Yeah, no, but I knew Ronaldo and I watched many things about him. And we talked, and you can see a video about that with Thuram, Desailly, also Deschamps and Lizarazu. Now we talk about the fact that he's a kind of a magician and how he works with his skills, and that you really have to focus on the ball and only on the ball, because if you follow the legs, you're gonna be lost very quickly because he was so fast. So that what happened one time, you know, in the first half, and I got the ball, so he gave me lots of confidence. And again, I was very much helped out by my teammates because they were covering me. But I was only Ronaldo, you know. I had Rivaldo to mark as well. I had Bebeto as well, because the Brazilian player, they knew Desailly, Thuram and Lizarazu, and they didn't know that bald guy who normally shouldn't have played. So he said, "Oh, we're gonna go on him." So I had the three guys coming to me, but. Yeah, again, you know, my teammates helped me out.
You replaced Laurent Blanc, yeah? Is that right, Frank?
Correct.
Yeah, that's right. He was red carded. I played the third game against Denmark, and normally I should have stayed on the bench. And because of Bilic, Laurent Blanc was sent off in the semi-final against Croatia, and I had to play the final, and, well, he changed my life.
Do you think he resents really you did. For that?
Do I think what?
That Laurent Blanc hates you.
Oh, no. I think he hates Bilic.
Right.
And French people, they think that I owe... Some French people believe that I paid Bilic to do so because we knew each other. And it's funny, but after the semi-final game, Bilic came up for last corner to try to equalize. And after the corner, the referee blew the whistle and Bilic was next to me. And he hugged me, wishing me the best for the final. And the day after, he was in a French newspaper saying that something was going on, you know, with Bilic and I. That was really fun. And I talked to him like a year or 2 years ago. And I said, you know what, French people still, I owe you money. He said, well, when do you do the transfer? I'm still waiting.
Brilliant. But, I didn't know that bit. That's a nice little...
Yeah, the creation's really done. Was that the same World Cup where... some of the antics, was that the one where somebody threw the ball at Rivaldo at the corner kick?
And yeah,
and it hit him on the thigh,
yes.
And he went down holding his head. I mean, and also going back to the initial question, didn't Ronaldo have a problem in the final?
Well, of course, the starting 11 came out.
He had in the morning or the day before, I think it was in the morning, he was playing video games. And he had an epilepsy problem, so they brought him to the hospital, and he wasn't feeling that good, but I tell you, he was running like hell. I mean, he was maybe tired because of many games that he played this season particularly, but he was still a hell of a player, so I don't try to find any excuses because of my performance, but he was still a great Ronaldo.
You should have seen him in the first game. Holy smokes.
Did you see him at all in the first game?
No, I went to the other side of the field. Wherever he was, I went to the other side of the field. I had enough of a plate with Roberto Carlos, but man, he was... can't imagine. I mean... No, I'm not going to say it. We're just talking about, you know, putting a bit of weight on. The big man's... He's put a wee bit of weight on.
Yes, he has.
It just made me think that not that I'm comparing myself to Ronaldo at all.
What's the highest scoring game you've been involved with at professional level, Shane?
I think I played, would have been 5-4, 6-4, well, Reading against Exeter. Back in my Reading days. I think that was the highest scoring game.
And you won?
Yeah, we won. We were leading 4-0 at halftime. And then after about 65, 70 minutes, it was 4-4. We were at Exeter and then we scored a couple later on. I think it finished 6-4.
Oh, what about you?
4-4, Valley Parade. Don't ask me about the penalties.
4-4. Someone sent me the YouTube clip. Have you seen it?
I've seen the penalties. What okay. is it?
No, just the YouTube, it's of the game, of the 4-4.
It's mad, isn't it?
I didn't watch it.
Well, why not?
Because I've heard about it enough. I don't even see it.
See, you might just learn.
What? How to miss a penalty?
No. There's other things happening in the game.
Oh, really?
Great goals in the game.
Okay.
You might learn. Just ignore it.
I don't think so. It's old days, isn't it? It's pretty much black and white. Frank?
Oh, God.
With the national team, we won 10-0 against Azerbaijan.
Ah. Of course, because they broke that record, yeah. Didn't they? The current French team beat someone by
Gibraltar.
It's when I explained to you that they didn't play against a country.
Because
I think it was.
Gibraltar
is not a country. We're still on the record for me.
Who's Gibraltar's most famous ever player?
Danny Higginbottom.
There you go.
There we go. Perfect. With Spurs failing and Aston Villa busy in Europe, can United get to the top four?
I mean, honestly, see, this is the thing.
You just say no. We've done enough today.
Thank you, boss.
There you go.
Because last week you told me to walk out of the show.
Yes.
25 minutes in.
I know, and you didn't. You should have.
You got upset and you go.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah, you should have.
And I was very restrained.
Okay.
Provocation.
Right.
But you're like, next time you do it, I will go.
Okay, good. Right. United, Shaq, can they?
No.
I don't think they will.
Okay, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. We will be back tomorrow. Lots going on tomorrow, of course. Manchester United take on Liverpool. Barcelona against Atletico Madrid. Be sure to join us in the next edition of the show as we reflect on all of those games, plus a lot more.